This is Matt Katz with you on The Takeaway, and we continue our coverage of the ongoing nationwide prison strike. In at least 17 states across the nation, prisoners are refusing to work, holding sit-ins, and going on hunger strikes. On Tuesday night, protesters on the outside brought plastic horns, pots and pans, and other makeshift instruments to take part in a noise demonstration outside the Metropolitan Detention Center, a federal detention facility in Brooklyn where inmates are awaiting trial. The aim was to make enough noise so detainees could hear them through the building's narrow rectangular windows. Kevin Steele was one of the demonstrators. He spent 8 years behind bars for assault from the time he was 17. He got out earlier this year.
The worst feeling inside the prison is probably the water system, how we shower in brown water. They have us drinking brown water, and it's mold in the shower areas, so that's probably the worst thing that they could possibly do to someone that's living in America. At least America's not a third world country.
Steele says that people who have never been to prison probably don't understand exactly what a prison strike looks like.
When you hear prison strike, you think it's just going to be some rioting going on, and that's not the case. The case is that they want human rights. They're fighting for human rights, whether it's peaceful sit-down, sit-ins, or it's boycotts in the commissary and the mess hall. It's not really about violence. There's a lot of peaceful protesting going on inside there.
Another protester named Shaniqua Pippin says her little brother is still incarcerated in a facility upstate.
I know what they go through in there because of my little brother and because of just me visiting him. Like, they treat you like you've committed like the worst crimes just for wanting to see your loved one. So I think this show of strength is important, and I think this show of strength shows both the people inside, the cops, the state, everyone here repressing and oppressing us, that we are not going to just lay down and allow this to happen. And like, in the face of the prison industrial complex, in the face of white supremacy, in the face of anything, like, we're going to come out, we're going to come together, and we're going to show that we're going to go out with a fight.
Prisoners on strike are demanding things like restoration of voting rights, a prevailing wage for their labor, and their top demand is, quote, immediate improvements to the conditions of prisons and prison policies that recognize the humanity of imprisoned men and women. Nicholas Turner is the president of the Vera Institute of Justice, and I asked him, what is it about American prisons that's so dehumanizing?
The conditions in America's prisons that are dehumanizing and that are the source of protest really run the gamut from what I would describe as everyday corrosive dehumanization in prison. You aren't called by a name, you're called by a number. You don't eat a meal, you are given a meal at feeding time. You have no decision-making capacity. There are barriers to forming relationships. There's sort of an unending sense of idleness. So all of those things that are really quotidian and seem mundane are things that really end up dehumanizing. So it goes from that all the way through to really massively punitive and overused disciplinary structures like solitary confinement. And then I would say, you know, everything in between.
There are prisons run by private companies. There's prisons run by the state, some run by the federal government. And then you have thousands of local jails all over the country. Is there any way to look at this whole prison system and look at the conditions to determine whether or not they're getting better or worse?
Matt, that's a great question. This is the remarkable state of affairs, which is that we have 2.2 million people who are incarcerated in private and public prisons and jails, as you mentioned, and detention centers. And there is very little transparency. And that sort of unseeable, inaccessible condition means that it's a massively neglected area of reform interest, because people can go about their daily lives while we have 2.2 million people locked up and they see no evidence of that experience. And if you contrast that with, say, the videos of police shootings of Black people that we've seen over the course of the past few years, what those videos did for the American public is they shook people out of their complacency. People finally were able to see things that were happening and challenge their faulty assumptions about how the justice system was operating in that circumstance, policing. There is nothing like this in the prison context. So people have no accessibility, and as a result, we're malignly neglectful of it.
How do all these conditions in this system compare to that in other developed nations across the world? What are prisons like elsewhere?
So the conditions of prisons elsewhere vary dramatically, but in Germany, for example, the underlying principle in prisons is a commitment to human dignity. And we can take a lesson from that, because Germany, after World War II, committed government to the protection and restoration of human dignity as a result of its terrible history of the Holocaust. And so Germany said, we need to acknowledge that terrible history. We're never going to go back. And as a result, government must protect human dignity. And you see this in prisons. People have privacy. They control the locks to their cell doors. They can wear their own clothes. They are called by their own names. In many of the prisons, they can leave for the day and go to work and return at night. And I think America can learn a lot from this, because we have our own history of slavery and racial oppression and white supremacy. But yet, as a country, we have really failed to adequately come to terms with it and atone. And instead, what we have is a system that continues to dehumanize, albeit in different ways than it might have been the case in 1850, but it's still iteration of the same sort of societal instinct. So I think we need to look to places like Germany that have committed to human dignity and have done so not just because they think it's a more constructive way to run a justice system, but because it's an act of reconciliation.
Before we leave you, can you take a moment to tell Americans who have no connection to our criminal justice system, maybe they don't know anybody who's locked up, why you think they should care about the conditions of incarcerated folks?
What would you want for your kid? What would you want for your brother? What would you want for your father if he ran afoul of the law and was incarcerated? We do way too much us versus them in this country. We tend to sort of otherize people who are deemed criminal. And you see it in political dialogue right now. And what we really should be doing is remembering that everyone who is incarcerated is someone's child. And then the last thing that I would say is pragmatism. You know, more than 90% of people who are in prison are going to come out. They're going to be released, and they're going to come back and live with us. And do we want them to be damaged, or do we want them to be given the help that they need to be able to succeed upon release?
Thanks for joining me, Nicholas, and sharing your perspective on imprisonment in America.
Matt, thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
Nicholas Turner is the president of the Vera Institute of Justice.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.